Hello, everyone, and welcome to Genocide News Now from the Lemkin Institute for Genocide Prevention. We are your hosts, Molly Reagan and Teresa Merck. You can find all of our work at www.lemkininstitute.com and on social media. Now, let's dive into the news.
Our first story takes us to Haiti, where violence erupted again last week following an announcement by the 9-person transitional council of their choice for a new prime minister, Fritz Balazaire, a former sports minister. The transitional council was convened following the resignation of sitting Prime Minister Ariel Henry. While it was initially met with optimism by some political activists in the country, it also received threats. One prominent gang spokesman, who goes by the nickname Barbecue, warned the body to, quote, brace yourselves, unquote. The most significant task of the council is the oversight of elections that are scheduled to take place in 2026, a decade since the country's last elections in 2016. With armed groups controlling over 80% of the country's capital, the Transitional Council is facing an uphill battle. Prominent gangs oppose the Transitional Council and insist that they should have a seat at the negotiating table as well. The gang coalition calls itself Vive Ensemble, or Live Together, and have warned that not receiving a seat on the council will result in their having to make their voices heard another way. Vague and threatening language meant to instill fear of further violence and chaos. According to Innocent, a leader of one of the gangs that belongs to this coalition, the only solution is to sit and listen to this organization, after which he says there will be a resolution as soon as possible. Some Haiti experts believe that the resignation of Ariel Henry earlier this year was a mistake, as it granted legitimacy to the gang coalition's criticisms of the prime minister and validated their own belief that they are legitimate political actors. To demonstrate their seriousness, beginning in the evening on Wednesday, May 1st, gangs laid siege to several neighborhoods in the nation's capital and started burning everything in sight, according to an eyewitness who said he hid in a corner all night. Another resident stated that there were gunshots left and right as he and his partner searched for shelter following their own home being burned down. The area in which the attack occurred was controlled by a former elite police officer and leader of a powerful gang federation, Jimmy Sherzier, aka Barbecue. Arson and collective rape are tools used by armed gangs in order to subjugate the population, with gang members controlling many displacement camps and forcing sex in exchange for aid from young people living in these camps. The Lemkin Institute is horrified by the humanitarian emergency and political crisis taking place in Haiti and supports Transitional Council's efforts to secure and stabilize the nation. It remains to be seen how or if the council will consider collaborating with any part of the gang's coalition and what the consequences of such consideration would ultimately be for those living in Haiti.
Now to Ethiopia, where we mark the passage of 13 months since the government of Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed began its crackdown on the people of Amhara. Unrest erupted in April 2023 when the regional Amhara security forces were to be integrated into the Federal Army, the Ethiopian National Defense Force, or ENDF. Fearing persecution without the protection of the ASF, many Amhara civilians protested, while members of the ASF defected to the decentralized regional militias known as FANO. This led to arrests and suppression by the federal government. Conditions in Amhara deteriorated over the next several months, with shooting battles between FANO and the ENDF beginning in July and worsening in August. That month, the federal government declared a state of emergency for the region, imposing curfews on its citizens and blocking internet access. As battles between the ENDF and FANO raged, Abiy's government began to carry out drone strikes on towns and extrajudicial killings of civilians, while Amhara politicians and journalists were jailed both in the region and in the capital of Addis Ababa. Nowhere in the country is safe for the Amhara. In the neighboring region of Oromia, ethnic Amhara have been routinely killed and displaced by the majority ethnic Oromo. These pogroms have had little pushback from the federal government, which is headed by an ethnic Oromo from Oromia. Beginning last month, even more pressure has begun to mount on the Amhara as the resettlement terms of the Cessation of Hostilities Agreement between the Tigray People's Liberation Front, or TPLF, and the Abiy administration move forward. Amhara forces fought alongside the ENDF against the TPLF during the horrifying war from 2020 to 2022. In that time, Amhara forces reclaimed the disputed Wolkalite Western Tigray zone, which has been under Tigrayan control for the last 30 years. However, without the Amhara at the peace table, the fate of that territory and its inhabitants was left to be decided by Mekele and Addis. After the interim government of Tigray announced plans to move the displaced Tigrayans back into the Amhara-claimed territory by summer, clashes broke out and displaced 50,000 people in the region. Today, Amhara remains under a state of emergency, with the declaration having been extended by Parliament for an additional 4 months in February. With federally sponsored violence ongoing in the region and the threats of Oromia and Tigray mounting, the world's eyes need to be focused on the security for Ethiopia's Amhara population. The Lemkin Institute echoes the calls by the Ethiopian Commission for Human Rights for independent inquiries into alleged crimes being committed by the Abiy regime in Amhara. We also implore the United Nations Human Rights Council to reinstate the International Commission of Human Rights Experts in Ethiopia, whose mandate was allowed to expire in October 2023 after lobbying from Addis, to investigate what has happened not only in Amhara but elsewhere in the country so that all Ethiopians can have justice and peace. We believe Ethiopia needs an international peacekeeping force to ensure civilian security and set the stage for a large-scale transitional justice process. We now turn our attention to the Darfur region of Sudan, where conditions are becoming increasingly dire and the pleas to help from ordinary people are not being met with action. The latest wave of violence comes as the Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, encircled the city of El Fasher, North Darfur's capital and the only city in the province that has not been captured. El Fasher is considered a humanitarian hub for Darfur and hosts a population of at least 500,000 internally displaced people, including hundreds of thousands displaced by genocidal violence perpetrated by the Janjaweed earlier in the 2000s. This is particularly worrisome as the RSF is led by Hemeti, who was a Janjaweed commander. His genocidal tactics have proved no different this time around, as is evidenced by the 15,000 Masalit people who were killed by the RSF in the city of El Janina last summer. This week, in a report on the incident, Human Rights Watch has called on the international community to investigate the intent of what it calls, quote, potential genocidal acts to determine whether they meet the legal definition of genocide. While conditions in El Fasher worsen, the regional director for Eastern Africa of the World Food Program, Michael Dunford, said time is running out to prevent starvation all over Darfur. People have been forced to consume, quote, grass and peanut shells. If assistance doesn't reach them soon, we risk witnessing widespread starvation and death in Darfur and across other conflict-affected areas in Sudan, Dunford said. Agencies trying to help are finding it increasingly hard to do so. Two International Committee of the Red Cross drivers were killed by gunmen in South Darfur on May 2nd in an attack that left three other staff members injured, according to the humanitarian organization. The ICRC team was attacked en route to assess the crisis among communities affected by armed violence in the region, the organization said. The Lemkin Institute is dismayed by the continued violence faced by the people of Sudan generally and Darfur specifically. We urge the international community to do all that it can to stop this conflict and prevent it from devolving further into a proxy war for the great powers. If that happens, it can only mean more death and despair for a forgotten people who have suffered for so long.
Our final news item of the day concerns the protests led by university students across the country, which have grown in size and scope in recent weeks. Importantly, the students are protesting for their universities to divest from companies or organizations which support Israel, asserting that they do not want their tuition dollars to be used to fund genocide. The response to these protests by university administrations has been overwhelmingly heavy-handed, with colleges and universities across the country calling in police forces with riot gear in order to arrest students and break up protests. Far from quelling the topic, the response by the administrations has provided momentum to the movement, with pro-Palestine encampments popping up on campuses nationwide, an increasing rate following Columbia University's deployment of NYPD officers on its campus last month. According to CNN, over 2,200 people have been arrested on campuses since April 18th, with universities such as Columbia and the University of Southern California canceling their large commencement ceremonies, opting for smaller events out of security concerns. We at the Lemkin Institute applaud every student and individual who has stood up for Palestine and the Palestinian people's right to exist. We want to remind the students that they are doing the work of genocide prevention and that the world will ultimately understand that they were on the right side of history. Our politicians and institutions, on the other hand, will be remembered for their moral failure during this time. It is not often that we get to be celebratory in our coverage here at the Lemkin Institute, but today is an exception, as we thank university students the world over for standing up to injustice and for emphasizing this topic at a time when Western governments are all too happy to look away. The Lemkin Institute thanks you for your courage and your commitment. That is all we have for this episode of Genocide News Now, but be sure to tune in to future episodes, which we release every other Monday, to follow the Lemkin Institute's work on conflicts with more rapid developments, such as Israel's war on the Palestinians and Azerbaijan's aggression toward Armenia. Be sure to subscribe to us on social media. You can find us at Lemkin Institute, all one word, on Instagram, X, AA Twitter, Facebook, WhatsApp, and Telegram. And for more on our work in the field of genocide prevention, visit our website at www.lemkininstitute.com. The Lemkin Institute for Genocide Prevention is an all-volunteer organization that relies on donations from individuals like you to cover operating costs. If you appreciate the clear-eyed, even-handed, and frank assessments of situations you care about, please consider making a one-time contribution or monthly gift on our website or subscribe to this podcast on Patreon. Thank you for listening and have a great day.